Listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com, and I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. It is TGI Friday. Living for the weekend. I hope you have a lot of good things planned for this weekend. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, have to do, and must do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it ain't, you still got to do it anyways. And I understand that. One of the things I want to talk about, boy, the weather is bad, isn't it? It's nice here in Atlanta, but man, in the Midwest, one of them Alberta Clippers just swooped on down and the weather's in the teens with some wind chill factors and so forth and so on. But hey, in the time of climate change, you can expect anything and be prepared. You should be prepared for anything. You know, because just like it's real cold today up in that Midwest area, it, you know, 2 months from now, January, it might be a beautiful day. Although, I'm just going to keep it real. I am cheering, hoping, I might even pray on it, that there's a bad weather day when they have the Super Bowl in February in Minneapolis. Because they shouldn't have a Super Bowl in Minneapolis in an outdoor stadium. They had a Super Bowl in Minneapolis before and in Detroit, but they were both indoor stadiums. And they had one in New York at an outdoor stadium. They got lucky, you know, because I don't think you should be planning an outdoor event. Hockey is one thing. If they want to do hockey, they can go ahead and do hockey. But in terms of, you know, having a Super Bowl out in that kind of weather, man, that's crazy. We're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. These are all Eastern times I'm about to announce. And on Wednesdays, on Time for an Awakening, is Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. And that's from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Wednesday. And then on Thursdays, last night, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or like we like to say, Family Economics. And that is at 9 p.m. with Brother DJ, Baba Kambizi, and Baba Akima, and Sister Nanana, and many others. And then on Friday this evening, Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and that's from 8 p.m. to 11. Time for an Awakening. And then tomorrow, SST, Saturday Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. 10 a.m. to 12 noon Eastern Time on Time for an Awakening. And then tomorrow afternoon, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. Black Reality Think Tank, and that's from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And then on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive, Sister POC. revived. And then Sunday evening, time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And that is at 7 p.m. Those are the programs that are happening right here on Time for an Awakening. And if you get a chance to check them out. This is a tough one for me today that I'm going to present. And for those who want to engage in a conversation, of course, our call-in number is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. A good friend of mine, sent me some information about Dr. Umar Johnson. And of course, I never forget when I saw Umar Johnson on Hidden Colors, the first one. He's been on all four. And I was like, because I didn't know him. I knew many of the other scholars, particularly the more contemporary scholars. I knew them, but I didn't know this young man, you know. And I was pretty impressed, you know, with his presentation, his scope and knowledge and so forth. And develop a friendship with the brother to some degree. I mean, he knows me. I know him. You know, if you talk to Umar Johnson, hey, you know a brother from Milwaukee who lives in Atlanta named Brother Oshie, he's, you know, unless he has amnesia. But hey, so what? Brought him to Milwaukee a couple of times. One time I went and picked him up from Chicago, from O'Hare Field in Chicago. You know, put him up. You know, and a couple of presentations that he did at the Milwaukee Brotherhood of Firefighters Hall were just jam-packed and outstanding, you know. But some issues has arose. In fact, I listened to a piece yesterday with his father, Dr. Umar Johnson's father. One of the things that his father complained about was the issue of only marrying a sister. He didn't say his son was not a doctor. He didn't say his son did not do this or that, except that he said that he was disappointed, you know, with the profanity, particularly the rants that he had, particularly with the sister who called herself the conscious stripper. I mean, you know, he's a young man. He has two daughters, from my understanding, never been married. And that's his prerogative if he wants to deal with sisters. But to me, if you're in the limelight, if you're in out front, particularly on an issue as serious as African liberation, because that's what I call it, Pan-Africanism, and he calls himself the Prince of Pan-Africanism, or the Prince of Pan-African. And that's serious to me, because it is, as far as I'm concerned, what Marcus Garvey talked about, what all the other scholars talked about, the salvation for African people on the continent and throughout the diaspora. It's what Malcolm X talked about. And so I take it very seriously. And so any of the scholars who have proven to do something otherwise, I have issue with them. I have issue with Malefi Ketiasanti for what he did to that school in Kansas City, Missouri. I have serious issue with that. I have issue with Dr. Malana Karinga and some of his antics and stuff that he has done. Because to me, one of the things that we must be in this movement to help our people understand the direction that we need to go is we who are trying to lead it must have integrity, must have some transparency, must have some commitment to making what we talk about a reality in our time. And so if there is issues, you must be open and be able to confront them. I know that, and I don't know if you saw, but you can still see it on YouTube. You can go to Roland Martin, Dr. Umar Johnson interview, if you want to do that. I don't know if that's titled like that, but I'm quite sure on News One Now, on TV One with Roland Martin. They had an interview. He had three panelists. And some words were you know, thrown back and forth, because what they were challenging him on some of the things I'm talking about right now. But a friend of mine sent me, a good friend of mine sent me some information and an article from The Root. And also to that interview with his father, or his father is not being interviewed. His father is doing a FaceTime or whatever, talking about his son. It's a good amount of time that he's talking, you know. So here's the article from The Root. We fact check, and this article is by Michael Herrod, and I like the brother's writing. He's always trying to be comical to some degree, and as you see as we further read. We fact checked Umar Johnson's Hotep tantrum with Roland Martin because someone had to. Well, everyone is grabbing the popcorn for the Black China and Bob Kardashian beef. The real Donnybrook was happening Monday on TV One's News One Now, when host Roland Martin had Ankh Right leader, see what I'm saying? Ankh Right Eat leader Umar Abdullah Johnson on his morning show. Everything seemed cool in the great Ascots versus Daishiki war. Because Roland Martin likes to wear ascots, so the great Ascot and Daishiki war. And then everything exploded. Johnson called a panelist on the show a coon, and the segment erupted into a shouting match whose volume is rarely heard outside of Baptist Church deacon board meetings. Even though Johnson went into his belligerent, "This motherfucker is lying," voiced in time in record time, he made a number of claims about himself about which many have asked for years. Instead of wild speculation, we decided to look into these claims and settle them once and for all. To be clear, The Root does not have a vendetta against Umar Johnson, but we believe that everyone who has collected almost $750,000 from American African people should be vetted. You think Newsweek should do this? You think the Washington Post even knows who Umar Johnson is? While we don't look into some of the more defamatory accusations that have emerged in the last weeks, the conscious stripper fiasco or the weird screaming video against another Hotepcornian, during which he answered the phone while it was still ringing, we decided to focus on the claims that have emerged from Johnson's own mustachioed mouth. Mustachioed. That's right, he doesn't wear a mustache. What he was talking about was the other rant that Umar went off, profanity-laced rant of Sarusetti. Brother Sarusetti, as a historian, claims he sat at the feet of Dr. Ben Joseph Gohanan and Dr. John Henry Clark. He claims he sat at the feet of Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark. And I'm not going to dispute that, because I'm quite sure. I mean, you know, I've had a moment where I had lunch with Dr. Clark, which is one of the highlights of my life, having that opportunity. But, you know, Sarusetti is very profane. I mean, I'm profane, but not on this program. You know, that's why I don't give you my opinion on stuff, because I'm profane. What I try to give you is based on scholarly research by our scholars and historians. And I mean I ain't talking about Henry Louis Gates. I'm talking about men and women who are warrior scholars. Men and women who understood our situation and wanted to present the information to us. So, he says he's a certified school psychologist. Is he? In a word, yes, he is. And he show his credentials here from Millersville University. And show some other information in 1997. The route did as Johnson suggested to Martin and called Millerville University. We talked to the administration office, which was sent to us, the registrar's office, which was told us that all verifications of degrees, enrollment, and credentials is handled by the National Student Clearinghouse, which contracts with many colleges and universities. The National Student Clearinghouse verified Johnson's graduation from Millersville University, but because there has been speculation that the Umar Abdullah Johnson in those records is a different guy, we searched the archives and found his picture of Johnson as a senior at Millersville University. We also found evidence that Johnson is certified as a school psychologist in the state of Pennsylvania. So what happened to all the money he raised? For more than 5 years, Johnson has traveled the country raising money to open the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Leadership Academy for American African Boys, or FDMG, receiving donations for thousands of his supporters. In 2014, he informed the public that he was looking to buy the now-defunct St. Paul's College in Virginia and turn it into a boarding school. When confronted about the specifics, he has refused to answer, and he did in a particular video. I'm not going to play that. 2 weeks after the video was uploaded in January 2015, Johnson told a crowd that because people don't want to take their lazy ass to the post office and get a stamp, he had to open up a PayPal account. However, in the same video, Johnson informed his followers that PayPal had frozen more than 100,000 in donations because he didn't have a 501(c) status required for tax-exempt nonprofit organizations. He then stated that he had applied for the tax-exempt status. On March 3rd of 2015, Johnson created a GoFundMe page with the express purpose to acquire and rehabilitate either the historically St. Paul's College in Lawrenceville, Virginia, or the Chamberlain Hunt Academy in Port Gibson, Mississippi. To date, GoFundMe says that he has raised $375,000 in the 28 months since he began his campaign. This does not include the cash he has received through in-person solicitations and speaking engagements or the money that has been mailed to him by supporters outside of his online campaign. On Monday's News One Now show, Johnson told Martin that he has raised $700,000. To date, no one has seen financial documentation showing how much money he has collected or how he has used any of that money. No one has seen a business plan, an application for accreditation, or anything tangible that indicates he's making strides toward this so far mythical school. According to IRS rules, all nonprofit organizations are required to make available for public inspection certain annual returns and applications for exemption and must provide copies of such returns and applications to individuals who request them. Plus, the IRS mandates that no part of a Section 501(c) organization net earnings may endure to the benefit of any private shareholder or any individual. Having been a member of a number of 501(c)(3) groups, even fours, understanding that no individual within that organization, in that group, can benefit from any donations that are given. This solves everything, right? Since Johnson said that he applied for tax-exempt status in 2015, anyone who asks for financial records for the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey School gets them, right? Anything else wouldn't be just be unscrupulous. It is illegal for a nonprofit to hide its finances. And there is a video of Johnson saying that he applied 2.5 years ago for the 501(c) status. But when the Root searched the IRS database for the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey School, we could not find no record of Johnson's application, under his name, the name of the school. There is a Frederick Douglass Masteries Charter School listed in Pennsylvania, but that is not it, or any verification of the name. We even searched for the address he listed for donors. Nothing. As it stands, there are thousands of people who have donated between 500,000 and $750,000 for American African empowerment and upliftment, but no one knows what happened to their money. Is he a descendant of Frederick Douglass? Since he raised to prominence, Johnson has been accused of lying about his familiarity relations to the civil rights hero Frederick Douglass, forcing the family to issue a statement that reads in part, "The family of Frederick Douglass has received numerous inquiries about Umar Johnson's questioning his relationship to Frederick Douglass. There have been questions about the legitimacy of his PhD and the handling of donations he received for schooling he is promoting. We can tell you that 100% certain that he is not a descendant of Frederick Douglass." With that being said, Mr. Johnson is very careful not to bill himself as a descendant, but he doesn't correct people when they refer to him in that way. Johnson told Martin that he has never claimed to be a direct descendant of Frederick Douglass. Instead, Johnson asserts that his great-great-great-great-grandfather was Douglass's first cousin. Yet Johnson has often claimed that he does, in the clip, to be a direct descendant of Frederick Douglass, even though almost every genealogical researcher agrees that the term ancestor applies to someone from whom you descended in a direct line, parent, child, grandparent, great-grandparent, etc. Also, the Douglass family claims that he doesn't correct people when he is referred as a direct descendant is supported by that short video. To be clear, none of Frederick Douglass's blood flows to Johnson's veins. The closest he will admit regarding this is that maybe he shares a lineage with Douglass, which is akin to thinking you end up in Snoop Dogg's will because he calls you cousin. He calls you cuz. This research foiled my plans to inherit a great booty shake fortune from my Uncle Luke. Luke from Two Live Crew. Yeah, this cat is a... But is he a doctor? This is the million-dollar question. It is impossible to prove a negative. Just as you can't prove that I'm not a Jedi and an X-Man who possesses the ability to fly, even if you see no evidence of it, I can't prove Dr. Umar Johnson is not a doctor of psychology. However, the roots search every level of Johnson's education, but could find no proof that he holds a doctorate in psychology. But what started off as a simple educational research has turned into a mystery. The school Johnson's claimed to have attended for his doctorate, the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, also participates in the National Student Clearinghouse. It could not verify a degree under any variation of the name Umar Abdullah Johnson, or under Johnson's birth name, Tremaine Shoemake. Wow. Even doctoral candidate must submit a dissertation. Every doctoral candidate must submit a dissertation, and the POCM makes its students' dissertations available online. When we looked through the university's archives, we found a link to Umar Johnson's dissertation, The Relationship Between Self-Concept, Academic Achievement in American African Middle School Students, a correlational report or study. That was the title of his dissertation, which indicates that Johnson indeed submitted a thesis in the POCM's Doctor of Psychology program. But unlike the other dissertation, Johnson's was not available for download. We then looked at the graduation ceremonial program in 2010, the year Johnson's dissertation was submitted. He was not listed on the commencement program, even though he appears in the 2009 program as a doctoral candidate. In fact, we could not find any evidence that Johnson graduated from Pennsylvania Community School. Mysteriously, a PDF file of the program from every commencement exercise at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, that's the PCOM, Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, is available online, except for the year Johnson supposedly graduated. In addition, 99% of the students who received a doctorate have their dissertations available online, but Johnson's is not. This POCM also posts videos of its graduating ceremonies online. The school has cataloged them on YouTube in a playlist, except someone has submitted a copyright infringement claim only for the graduation ceremony that took place in the year Johnson supposedly graduated. The fact that Johnson's dissertation, commencement program, graduation ceremony, and other piece of documentation that we could prove he graduated from POCM with a doctorate have apparently disappeared from the internet is either the biggest coincidence in the history of histories, or he just may have a doctorate degree. Or he just may not have a doctorate degree. Then the Root reached out to Johnson by email and Twitter for comments on this issue and others. We received no response by the time of the publication. So what now? Well, if I had a cure for racism, American African unity, and the education of American African boys, or whatever else Johnson claims to know, and the only thing holding me back was the widespread belief that I was a Hotep charlatan, when I walked onto the set of Roland Martin's show, I'd have my degree and a transcript. When I showed up at the Breakfast Club studio, I'd have had a certificate and a certified financial breakdown of where people's donation went. The fact that he does not and will not do this is Donald Trump tax returns level strange. Damn, he compared Dr. Umar Johnson with Donald Trump. The fact that he does not and will not do this is Donald Trump's tax return level strange. So I'm saying that Dr. Umar Johnson is a lying con man who stole money from his own people, many of whom are poor but hopeful. Just because no human being on the planet Earth has seen his doctorate, I also would never tell people that they shouldn't trust Johnson simply because they haven't seen a trace of evidence regarding where their donations go, or because he repeatedly cites scholarly facts that are the opposite of true. Although I think it says somewhere in the 4th Thessalonians that you should never trust a man who wakes up in the morning and shaves his mustache off. Even when he gives speeches about uplifting American African women, I never remain you of this tweet. I'll remind you of a tweet that he sent to Chantel Beatty. And I think Chantel Beatty, the sister, was getting on Omar. And it says, "Thank you for your response. We heard in the U.S. that you may have problems with Dr. Umar Johnson." And there's some stuff on there. And then he replied, "Why is Miss Piggy contradicting every woman I know and contacting every woman I know, striving for a cosign for her character assassination of my campaign?" All I'm saying is that just because Umar Johnson appeared to be hiding his financial records, being less than open about where he gets his money from, defaming women on Twitter and traveling around the country, convincing people, many of whom are poor and uneducated, that he is on their side, doesn't mean that he's a con man. Maybe he's just colluding with the Russians. Wow. And it doesn't, unfortunately, stop there. You know, it doesn't stop there. It's unfortunate. And I would love to see Dr. Umar, you know, come through with some clear explanations. Because like I said, I think the most important thing that happens in this struggle for our peoples and our people's mind is that when we present something to them, that it is factual, that it is real, and we're not trying to bamboozle anybody, we're not trying to play anybody, we need honest men and women in this struggle for the minds of our people. We need brothers and sisters who will give you the facts of the situation uncompromisingly, seriously, unapologetically. This is from Urban Intellectuals, The Problem with Dr. Umar Johnson. Last time I had contact with anyone close to Dr. Umar Johnson, we, myself and several other constituents that didn't need to be mentioned here, have formed a group of American Africans and concerned people trying to gather together to get the word out about saving St. Paul's College in Lawrenceville, Virginia. One particular young lady was highly upset about it and had notified me that it was about to close. Then it was almost down to administrative services, a few students that need to finish up and graduate, and an advocacy group that was left on campus. The president of St. Paul's, Dr. Millard Pete Stith, was contacted by us and so with one of the program advocates with an on-site office who had also been working to save the school. We wanted the details, and we wanted to know if there was anything else that we could do to save the school, or at least preserve it for future use. We also invited Dr. Stiff to be interviewed on Black Men's Quarterly Talk Show. We worked feverishly for months to see what we could do about getting American African people actively involved in saving the school, and it was from out of nowhere, 5 months or so later, came Dr. Umar Johnson. For a hot minute, we had conspiracy theory of our own going on about how he could have gotten the information without listening to us madly publicizing our efforts to save St. Paul. Hint, Dr. Umar Johnson is from Virginia, and at the time, there was another HBCU sinking and dying in his own home state. Dr. Umar is not from Virginia, excuse me, he's from Pennsylvania, he's from Philly. Dr. Umar is not from Pennsylvania, and at the time, there was another HCBU sinking and dying in his own state. Objectively speaking, it may have been easier for him to save that school in his own home state with the money he was ultimately said to have collected. With that kind of investment, he could have simply been gracious to his contributors, disclosed all transparency that was not enough, and started a virtual school online. He could have started a virtual school online or any number of webinars, conferences, and digital teaching sites available to anyone with that kind of money. The technology nowadays is highly sophisticated and pretty cheap if you have a half a mil to spend. Then he could have raised more money from there, or is it just me, as you say. Anywho, the gist of this conversation is that we watched Umar Johnson begin a fundraising effort to purchase St. Paul and use it as a training academy for American African boys. We called Dr. Stith and the president of the on-site advocacy group at St. Paul's, and neither confessed to being made aware of Umar's efforts prior to that date. Fine, we said, as long as it is used to the good of American African people and these young men who do need our help. Let them do what he needs to do, and God bless him. We then said, we hope he will be successful. Rather than get upset about the general feelings that Umar was trying to smooth the school from under us after so many months of advertising, calling in, campaigning, and even doing a title search on the property to see how the building and the land were deeded, we wish Umar all the best. We then made an attempt to contact him to ask if there was anything we could do to help him. When we finally got his assistant on the phone, she told us that he would return our call after meeting, and he was in at the time. Needless to say, we never heard back after we teamed with the on-site group at St. Paul's and made at least two more attempts to speak with him and offer our assistance. One lady raised her dissent about his so-called radicalism and sleight of hand operations, but said she would go hand in hand with whoever the rest of the group decided to do. In the meantime, Dr. Umar's school changed its name to Frederick Douglass Academy during the offering. By the time he raised more than $250,000, so we heard, his PayPal account was frozen on accusations of possible fraud for lack of transparency. Shortly after, another tidbit broke out on the online scene that he did not raise the requested $500,000 or $5 million that he had labeled all. Because he did not raise the requested $5 million that he had labeled all American African people trifling after the school was sold off piece by piece, thus negating the importance of the ones who did contribute. Also, we had discovered some months before that Dr. Umar Johnson had previously copied an article from COINTELPRO conspiracy theory website nearly verbatim and cut and paste his name into it to order to make others think he was being tracked by the FBI and that they were on a sabotage and destroy mode with his efforts to educate the American African community and to save our boys. I refuse to call him crazy. Maybe he had a legitimate reason for doing that, but it's easy to bust cut and paste plagiarism jobs online, especially since the Republican Party does it so well and all the time. I won't even guess at why he would behave so covertly and then not even answer or return our calls. But in a nutshell, that is what happened and what many have said happened. Now this. At least anyone think I'll be trifling enough to care about whether or not he is actually wearing his t-shirt in the photo above. Dig deeper. Far be it from me or any of us to do something as trifling as to cut down a American African man for his efforts to help the American African community and particularly young men. But well, hell's bells. Figure it out for yourself. It's more than obvious that Dr. Umar Johnson, it's more than obvious that Dr. Boyce Watkins is highly upset with Dr. Umar Johnson because of the link. I remember that when Dr. Boyce Watkins said what he said. He was highly upset with Dr. Umar Johnson because of the length of the following YouTube video, but took about 21 minutes out of your day to give it a listen. So what are your thoughts on Dr. Umar Johnson? Is he a good guy with the right intentions, but just spreading himself too thin? Or is he purposefully not making good on promises and intentions? We would love to know your thoughts. Wow. I have some respect, a lot of love and respect for Dr. Umar Johnson, and I wish that he would answer this. I wish he would forcefully answer this because it needs to be answered. You know? I wish he would because it definitely needs to be answered. Because when you come out forcefully for African people considering our situation, and you articulate the problems that are happening to us, and then you propose something that could help us, And then when you ask for support to make it happen, and there are many of us who want to make it happen, and then you're proven. I mean, he's truly, I mean, if this is the case, then like I said, both of those articles I read to you, you know, are damaging, no doubt. And I really want this man, I want this brother to come out and deal with them. If not, just please return people's money and don't say nothing. No more. I mean, you see, I'm struggling with this. I'm struggling with this because in our movement, in the African-centered movement, in the Pan-Africanist movement, in our call for independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for us as a people, we must be above board. We must be accountable. We must have integrity. We must be righteous in our dealings, particularly with one another. We have a caller. Good morning, caller.
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good morning.
Good morning, Marcus. How are you today, brother?
I'm doing great, brother. I'm doing great. You know, I'm listening to your commentary and things. You know, I respect Brother Umar Johnson. You know, I respect him more than I respect these preachers. I respect him more than than some of these college professors in these HBCU schools, because every community that you can, every black community that you can see in this country, across this country, you find it is inundated with churches. And it is also inundated with poverty. See, so, I mean, I would put more, cast more, and then put the magnifying glass on these people here, these preachers and these people, because you know, I mean, it's crazy. They said every Sunday we deposit $15 million in white folks' banks. And this money is used to gentrify the community. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the brother who's trying to do something. Remember, you know, this brother, his goal was $4 million. That's what he was trying to. He hasn't even reached the goal yet of $4 million. See? Black women spend more money on their hair. Okay? If they would stop spending money on their hair and put it, the brother would have had the money to do the right thing. You know, he's one of the few brothers who out there doing the speaking and doing the right thing. You know, so our people need to stop being hypocritical. You know, we in these churches here, as I said, it's inundated. Our neighborhoods are inundated with church. I live in Memphis, I can tell you. And in one square block, Brother Oshie, they got around 10 churches. Around 10. And beside every church is an abandoned building. Homelessness. And we have homeless people walking around the street. Crazy. Our people crazy. Lamar Owen College, one of the most historical black college around in America. Gentrification taking place. They don't invest the money back into the community. They don't, so we should put the magnifying glass on these people here, these religious leaders. That's where the black leadership come from, these religious leaders. And leave the brother alone. The brother trying to do something positive. You know what I'm saying? You know, I ain't going to disparage the brother. You know, because the brother is a good brother. He's one of the few people out there speaking the truth. You know, and who knows if he got the degree or not. To hell with the damn degree. We ain't going to find the white man. I ain't got no degree, but I've got more sense than a lot of the people who got so-called degrees from the white institution. I'm a self-taught man. You know what I'm saying? So the brother is a positive brother. They need to get up off of the brother and go put the pressure on these politicians, these preachers who pimp in the black community. You know what I'm saying? And I leave the brother alone. Anyway, you take care, brother Oshi. Thank you.
Thank you, brother Marcus. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. I think for me is that, you know, I'm hoping that when you put yourself in front, that you present yourself in an honest and truthful way. If you say you are a doctor and you have these degrees, then, you know, you can present them. If you say this is what you're going to do and why I'm getting this money, because he has done some good stuff. He has done some, he has taken these things that I do know. He has taken a number of young people, taken them to the Caribbean, taken them to Africa. He has done some things. There is no doubt about, nobody can dispute that. And I know that there are some of us who, when someone like Dr. Umar Johnson presents themselves in a way, would love to cut them down, would love to see them be belittled. I know this. And that's why for me, I don't want them to give them that opportunity. I don't want them to give them any rope, which they may hang myself with. And so therefore, how I present myself and what I say about myself, it is a fact. And I agree with you, Brother Marcus. You know, he didn't have to say I'm a doctor because how he flows and things he says is on point. And that's a fact. But to misrepresent yourself, and then that becomes just like, but that comes like, it's just like in a trial when the person who is on the stand and he takes an oath to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And then when they come to find out that they have not told the truth, or didn't tell the truth, they perjured themselves, they've lied. And now everything that they have said is now stricken. And it could be critical and key. But now because they have lied, it's over. We have another caller. 414. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, my brother. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Until you read that articles. I mean, those articles.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate.
It is.
If something like this is true, you know, it's just that I'm in total agreement. Whatever we do, it has to have some integrity. And we have to understand we have to operate in unison with one another. If someone is doing something wrong, we should hold them accountable. I totally agree with that. Because it's going to be critical for us to move to another level in moving forward as a people. What we say and what we do has to have some integrity. And that's going to be the foundation of us rising above what we're going through in this country, or across the world, period. You know, so it's critical. So it's sad to hear.
Yeah, yes, it is, Brother Jeff. I appreciate that comment. It is sad to hear, man, and it's very unfortunate. And I'm hoping that real soon, an explanation is given or some documentation is given and we can begin to move forward. And hopefully that he will move forward with us. You know, I mean, the bottom line is that we need people with the courage and the wisdom and the insight of what Dr. Umar presents, but we cannot
have people coming in saying they're about this, doing this, that, and the other, taking money and then getting out. Because under the disguise and under the umbrella of saying they're African-centered or they're Pan-Africanist, it hurts our struggle. It hurts the legitimate aspirations of those of us who are trying to help our people wake up, try to put some things on our people's minds to get them to see and develop that understanding and that vision. It really hurts. And that's what's problematic.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, my brother.
It's totally unfortunate.
Yeah. It well, really is.
We still got a lot of work ahead of us, brother, so we just got to keep it going.
Right on. Right on, Brother Jeff. I appreciate it. We're going to take a break.
All right.
You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to be right back. Stay right here with us.
Who has created the slum and the ghetto that you're living in? Nothing but a debt.
And since the American white man has used his control over the press and over the textbooks and over all forms of media to make it appear that he has done us a favor by bringing us here and enslaving us, then the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has to rewrite history or retell history. And since the white man can't dispute this truth, he tries to defend himself by saying that Mr. Muhammad is teaching hate. It's not hate to say that we were kidnapped and brought here. It's true. It's not hate to say that we were Jim Crow, discriminated and segregated. It's true. It's not hate to say that the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in this country, came up with a hypocritical desegregation decision 9 years ago, which they haven't enforced yet. That's not hate. That's true.
You're quoted as having said when an airliner crashed with a number of white people on board that you were glad it happened.
The white race in this country collectively are guilty of these crimes that our people are suffering from collectively, and therefore they would suffer some collective disaster, collective grief. And when that plane crashed in France with 130 white people on it, and we learned that 120 of them were from the state of Georgia, the state that my own grandfathers was a slave in, why, to me, it couldn't have been anything but an act of God, a blessing from God, and I frankly and sincerely pray for similar blessings from him to repeat themselves as often as he can spare them.
But I take it then you support the freedom-loving attempts of the peaceful marchers in Alabama and these places.
You don't get freedom peacefully. Freedom is never safeguarded peacefully. Anyone who is depriving you of freedom isn't deserving of a peaceful approach by the ones who are being deprived of their freedom. And when black people in this country come out from under the mental straitjacket that the Negro clergymen have placed them in, and begin to see that the only way you can get freedom is to get it the same way the white man in this country got it from England, or he says he got it from England. He was willing to pay the price for freedom. When you're willing to pay the price for freedom, then you get it. But the Negro in this country has never been willing to pay the price for his freedom. All of the price that we have been paying in the past has been freedom for the white man. We fought abroad so that the white man in America could be free today to sick police dogs on us, to beat our people in the heads with police clubs, and to turn water holes on little women and children and babies simply because they want to walk down the street like decent human beings. That's now the only way you can have peace is to eliminate those injustices, and the American white man is not going to eliminate them. He's going to talk that pretty talk, but he'll still continue to practice those inhuman deeds.
You got the Honorable Elijah's message yourself behind prison walls.
When I was a Christian, I committed many crimes, and those crimes led to my own imprisonment. And also led to my being very atheistic, agnostic first and then atheistic. And it was only after hearing the religious teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that I became religious and was able to reform myself and rehabilitate myself. But I learned that after trying to reform and rehabilitate myself, that the American white man was more against me then than he was when I was a criminal, when I had criminal tendencies and was trying to carry out or practice his Christianity.
Do you blame Christianity for your crimes?
Christianity is one of the real causes of most of the condition that black people in this country are confronted with. It's the religious concept that Christianity has given Negroes in this country that makes us almost incapable of solving our own problems. The black man in this country has a different religious concept when he's a Christian than the white man has. If you notice, the black man is the only one who will turn the other cheek to his enemy, or who will love his enemy, or who will pray for those who despitefully supposedly use him just because he thinks that's what Jesus wants him to do. Now, the white man preaches the same thing, but he doesn't practice it.
Now, this refusal to integrate, surely it must lead to demands for your own state in America.
The black people in this country have been like a misfit wife married to the white man here who hasn't treated us right. And today, since we have given up all hope of him ever changing, we want a divorce. We want a complete separation, but we want a property settlement. And we think that the white man, we think that the American government should give us a property settlement, which means part of this country, which they robbed from the Indians with our help, and which they have worked up to make the kind of land that it is today.
Do you think this really practical? Don't you think that the future really lies with a peaceful transformation of the scene?
If American government, the Supreme Court, the President of the United States, the Congress and the Senate, and all these white liberals have said that they're for integration, and these Negroes haven't gotten any more integration than they have, well, that's more impractical than separation. Practical means that which you can practice. And if the Supreme Court and the Army and the Navy and the government and the President are supposed to be for integration and you still can't get it, why, good night, you can't get this impossible. But we can get separation overnight because we already have it.
Mr. Malcolm, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. I thank you for letting the people over in Europe know what the white man in this country is doing to black people and the hypocrisy he's practicing when he accuses them over there of not getting their house in order. 20 million black people in this country have been just as thoroughly colonized by the American white man in a more shrewd, modern way than all of the colonized people in Angola, South Africa, or any other part of this world. But the white man over here hides his own dirt by constantly pointing toward Britain and France and Portugal and these other countries and accusing them of being colonial powers when he mastered colonialism before those countries ever knew what it was.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Hey, hey, hey. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and here today. Picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, oh. Right now. Simply cause our hair is long. Oh, you know we've got to find a way. Bring some understanding here today. Oh, oh, oh. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Come on, talk to me. Can't see what's going on.
What's going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on?
Tell me what's going on.
What's
I'll tell you what's going on.
What's going on?
Ooh. Right on. Right on.
Right on.
Right on. Right on. Right on. Right on. Right on.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, Brother DJ, Baba Kimbizi, Baba Kima, and Sister Nanana, and Baba Thurman, and a whole bunch of good people. And you should be joining them too, Us Lifting Us. Time for an awakening this evening. It's right. It is going to be Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Fridays. And tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore. And that's from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then tomorrow afternoon or early evening from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sundays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., our sister's back again with Revive, Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening, it is Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot as your hosts. And that is at 7 p.m. on Sunday's Time for an Awakening. That was very painful. I guess you could pick that up because if it was somebody, and I understand the root too, because the root I found out was owned by Armstrong Williams. I couldn't believe that. But then again, hey, because Armstrong Williams is one of the Negroes that I just early on could not stand. Conservative. It was in the Bush administration. Very apologist, But, hey, like I said, I think the bottom line is that what he does is come forth and I'm quite sure those of us in our community, would be willing to forgive, never forget, but definitely willing to forgive so we can move our struggle forward. And that's what we must do. You know, if you're talking about Pan-Africanism, if you're talking about liberation and sovereignty for African people, what you're talking about is not, this past Wednesday was sickening. Because of the elections that happened on Tuesday, and because a number of people, and particularly the Democrats, have won seats because of how messed up the Republican Party has been, particularly because of Donald Trump, they were all giddy and all happy. And I'm like, you had one sister who won an election from this Caucasian Republican because he made a statement about the Women's March that took place. And he says, I hope they hurry and get home so they can cook. Very sexist, very racist. And she beat him. Good. Right on. Right on for her. And then, of course, there was two transgender men who won, American African, who won elections in Minnesota. I can't remember the other one. In fact, one of them won an election of a man who was writing legislation against homosexuality and transgender, and so she challenged them and she won, and outstanding. And they're now talking about other things that, I'm sorry, dear brothers and sisters, after that piece that Malcolm talked about in the break was 50 years ago, and what he was saying is germane 50 years later, is applicable 50 years later. That's crazy. The segregation. Schools now are more segregated than major cities. Neighborhoods are more segregated. The bottom line is that we must, and I repeat, we must release the vice grip that this Caucasian has on our minds so we can think clearly, develop the vision collectively to move our people forward. One of the things that prevents that, religion. saw this article about Dr. Obadeli Kambone, and I heard Dr. Obadeli Kambone present. He's now in Ghana, West Africa. He's at the University of Ghana, which I visited when I was in Ghana at one time. In fact, at the University of Ghana, when my dear friend, Sister Salah, was living, she was the curator of the Black Inventions Museum. And we had the museum in Africa. And it was very extraordinary, the things that people were like, wow, really? I didn't know that. Yeah. They didn't even know some of the Ghanaian people who invented things, you know, because a lot of times our people, we don't know. I know I often say the adage, if we knew better, we do better. And that is true. If we knew better, we do better. But a lot of times some of our people don't want to know, because by knowing, you have to change your attitude and, more importantly, your behavior. So they rather remain ignorant. Remind me of the brother on the street. Brother on the street was asked a question. Brother on the street, yeah, what's up? Excuse me, what do you think adversely affects the American African community the most? Do you think it's ignorance or apathy? Brother on the street ponders the question, scratches his head, and says, you know what? I don't know, and I don't care. And that's the reality. Maybe funny, but that's the reality. The Bible was copied from the Egyptian book of coming forth by day, or what the Europeans said, the book of the dead. Dr. Obadeli Kambone. A lecturer at the Institute of African Studies at the University of Ghana, Dr. Obadeli Kambone has referenced to Bible as a false book whose wholly based on plagiarized texts, lies, and deceit. Has referred to the Bible as a false book wholly based on plagiarized texts, lies, and deceit. According to him, the biblical concepts, doctrines, and texts were copied from the ancient Kemetic pyramid texts, the coffin texts, Kemetic book of coming forth by day, and the instructions of Amenhotep, which form some of the world's oldest spiritual texts. They formed the source of Christian concepts like death and resurrection of the Holy Savior, Immaculate Conception, the idea of judgment after death, adding that the Ten Commandments was derived from Ma'at, an African ethical and moral system which was made up of 42 spiritual laws. He said this on X Live Africa online radio program, Good Morning Africa. He said this past Monday, I believe, because that's what it's dated. It was dated last month, sorry. In defending his claim, he said, we can still go and read it, and it's carved in stone. Over 5,000 years ago, there's a depiction of the Immaculate Conception in the Temple of Seti I. Also, Imhotep overseeing the birth of the Savior in temples in Kemet. The adulteration of the real story was during the Hyksos, people of mixed culture from Asia and Eurasia, with the invasion of Kemet in the 1700 B.C., before the Christian era, the Hyksos, which was the first major invasion. Everything was in place prior to that invasion. Everything was in place. And then because of instability within Kemetic society and with those who are in the hierarchy, the Hyksos came in and they were involved in Kemet for over 100 some years. And the only thing supposedly that they brought in that was different, because they, as Dr. A.C. Hilliard said, all invasions were destructive. All of the invasions did not bring anything into Kemet legitimately or for benefit. They were all destructive. And as well as this, the only thing they can really point to that the Hyksos brought in was the chariot. Was the chariot. Dr. Cambone cited direct limitations of ancient texts in the Bible with examples from Amenhotep chapter 6. Remove not the landmark from the bounds of the field and violate not the widows. And violate not the widow's boundary was copied in Proverbs 23, verse 10, has remove not the widow's landmark and enter not into the fields of the fatherless. Also in chapter 1, give thine ears, hear the words that are said, give thy heart to interpret them. Copied in Proverbs 23, 12, has apply thy heart unto instruction and thy ears to the words of knowledge. As well as Psalms 104, taken wholesale from 1000 BCE from what Akhenaten's hymn, which was written in 1350 BCE. Furthermore, he said, take the story of the parting of the parting of the sea, for instance, and that you can find in the story of the golden lotus, which dates back to Seneferu, who was the father of Khufu, who built the great pyramid in the fourth dynasty. The lecture added that translations were made from Kemetic texts to Hebrew and words like Yah, an Egyptian deity of the moon, formed the root word of the Hebrew god Yahweh. He finally encourages Africans to move away from believing fairy tales and beliefs to deal with historical documentations only. Our evidence are carved in stone, unlike Christians who are unable to back their stories and to learn more, because all the problems that we talk about in our society is the calculated and end result of an intentional process of not letting you know anything about your African self. Ashe. I think that's why I challenge Christianity, because it purports itself to be historical. Even though it has been clear, there's a piece on Zigeis that went around about 15 years ago, maybe more, breaking down the beginning of Christianity and where it was taken from and all the other crucified saviors, all of that stuff. So basically what the whole piece is saying, what Dr. Cambone is saying, is that no, Christianity is not historical. We got a caller. Let me get a caller. We always appreciate those who call. Good afternoon, caller. 646 area code.
Yeah, Hotep, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. How are you today?
I'm good. Listen, I had heard you briefly speaking of the great fraud, Omar Johnson. You know, the sad thing is that there's a lot of our brothers and sisters who, you know, follow and believe in him. But, you know, in all honesty, you can't get mad at him because, you know, our people are looking for something. And he has the ability to articulate something that people would really like to hear, you know, and with some of the training that he has, he can captivate the people. The sad thing is that our people don't have the ability to figure out quick enough that he's a fraud and a phony. So they get caught up in it. And, you know, it makes brothers and sisters who are really out here doing the work jobs much harder, you know? But I think one of the things that we have to do as a people is we have to stop going backwards and move forward bound. You know, sadly to say, you know, Marcus Garvey left us a plan. On a certain level, Elijah Muhammad left us a plan. You know, Malcolm X left us a plan. Martin Luther King left us things, and others also. But man, it's been 50 years or more since they've been gone. And we still talking about them, and we in the position that we in today, yo, we doing something wrong. And we have to begin to accept that, because we are supposed to have taken what they've given us and built upon it and making it better and getting the hell out of here and went back home and built up our nation. But we still stuck here dealing with this savage. And he can't even keep his house in order. You know what I mean? So, you know, I myself, honestly, I get sick and tired of hearing about Malcolm and them, man, because that's 50 years old. You know what I mean? I done read it all. I done heard it all. I'm trying to figure out what can I do today to just educate the youth. And like I tell the kids that I work with, stop thinking about here. Forget about America. Figure out how the hell you can get out of here. Because there may be something better for you somewhere else, someplace else around the world than it is here. Because this is a dying nation, man. And unfortunately, we as a people are stuck here. Because I would love to get out of here. But because of circumstances, I can't leave. But I'm going to try to live the best life I can here. And I'm not going to get caught up in this oppression with this white boy and his madness. But too many of us are caught up in it, man. And I'm not going to look back 50 years for the guidance to move forward. Because look, man, it's a waste of our time, because they done already gave us the lesson. They done already gave us the blueprint. So why ain't we building on the blueprint? You know, and that's our biggest mistake.
I agree with you, my brother. You're right. And I look at it this way. We really never accepted or built on. We really never accepted or built on a Pan-African or a move to unify our people. Every time something will happen, the system would always give us a little crumbs, and we always thought that it would get better. The civil rights struggle, excuse me, the civil rights struggle, the integration piece, all of those, the voting rights, all of these things, and we as the people thought that those things would help bring some equality in this system. This system was never about equality. You will never be equal with the people who started this system, because they started it for their benefit, for their prosperity. They didn't start this as some multi-ethnic, multiracial kind of experience. No. This was built by them for them. It was taken. Although, yes, we can claim we physically built this, we physically built that. Yeah, so what? We didn't build it for us.
But that's based on the premise of that Martin Luther King nonsense, integration. You know, that's like, you know, whenever you see somebody with that we built this country. Okay, so what? You built this country under what? Oppression. So that doesn't mean that you have any type of ownership to it. You know, and when you try to point that out to them, they don't want to hear that. Because their goal always is to make the oppressor love them, to make the oppressor accept them, to make the oppressor share with them, to make the oppressor treat them as though they're a human being. But if you know you're already a human being, you should never expect nothing from the cracker in the first place.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, that's the problem. We keep on trying to get acceptance from our moral, immoral, perpetual enemy. It's why, you know, I lost a lot of respect for Hakeem Adebooty, because it was Hakeem Adebooty who clicked it in my head when he made. I read his book, From Plant to Planet, and he had a statement in that book that absolutely changed my life. He said that the white man is your perpetual enemy. Now think about that. You're 20 years old, and you reading somebody saying that the white man is your perpetual enemy. Now, mind you, you don't really understand what that is, but you go on a quest, and you get the opportunity to sit in a class with Dr. Clark. So from that point on, you know what the deal is. Then 20, 25, 30 years later, you ask Haki that question, do he still think that the white man is your perpetual enemy? And he tell you no. That just tell you something the hell is wrong with our people. How could you make that statement 30, 40 years ago, and all of a sudden you decide to change your mind and you see all of the things that this white man has done to us over that period of time, and you change your perspective on that? But you know something? The funny thing was, a friend of mine said to me, you know, it's people like that who suffer from grandpa syndrome. And I said, what is grandpa syndrome? He said, man, it's just these Negroes just want to be able to enjoy their grandkids and die. You know what I mean? And when you think about it and you put it into context with people like Haki, that may be true. Because think about all that he's done. He done had kids. Now he have grandkids. He know that his time on the planet is short. You know, maybe he just want to enjoy his grandkids. Maybe he don't want to fight no more. You know what I mean? Maybe he don't want to educate them knowing the nature of the white man and them facing the type of threat that they should face having the knowledge and the wisdom. You know what I mean? People don't look at it that way because it's a heavy burden to know that this white man is no good, that he's your perpetual enemy.
And the fact
you don't ever deal with him on a certain level. When you know what he is, you always deal with him on a certain level, and he knows it because he can look at you and tell that it's just certain things you ain't gonna stand for. You know, and I mean that's really what the deal is when you put it into perspective. But for some reason, our people would rather not see this white man for what he is. Try to get along with him for what? What are you really getting in return? You're not getting nothing in return because the way that he's destroying the system now, he's not even giving you an opportunity to leave the planet in a safe space, in a peaceful place, in a place like your father may have or my mother is now enjoying, you know, retirement. Being able to not worry about certain things. Yo, our children's future are not like that unless they now start preparing for it on a level to where they're going to be economically sufficient. And the way this system is set up to, you're basically going to be indebted unless you train your children from the cradle not to never be indebted to this white man economically, to always be self-sufficient. And we don't train our kids like that, if the truth be told. We train them to go get an education, to get in mass debt, and then beg that cracker for a job.
Exactly. And that's the problem. We are beholden to them. We have never really put the energy and effort into self-sufficiency, self-determination. Although I say that we cannot do that here because you are right. The Caucasian is our enemy because he's acted like an enemy to us. Look what he is. That's why I don't, you know, when they talk about the Civil War was fought because we were enslaved. No, the Civil War was not fought because we were enslaved. Because if Caucasians battled and fought each other and killed each other for our freedom, oh, stop it. No, the
Get
Civil
out of here. That's crazy.
It's crazy. But yet,
you know something? Brother Osi, let me, because I know you got to get ready to go, and I got to get ready to go. Just think about this right quick. I know we were talking about the fraternities and the sororities like a week ago or so. Just imagine all of them Negroes that are unemployed at this time, that have all of the skill sets that they have, if they collectively came together, even though the Negroes aren't saved, but just think, if they went over to a African country and worked with the government to build up an African country, can you imagine what position we could be in the people in 10, 15 years from now with the type of skill set and the education and the tools and the resources that them sick Negroes have? You know what I mean? I mean, seriously. And we as Pan-Africans, I think we have the same type of skill sets also, to where as we should be able to collectively come together and go to an African country and build it up to make a better life for ourselves. Because it ain't, and I don't believe that it would be as hard as one would think it would be. Because I believe in the Afrocentric community, we have skill sets to go homeward bound and to build it up if we were to work together collectively and do it. Because why the hell are we working so hard to build this up when, number one, we don't really own anything here? Number two, they don't respect us. Number three, they ain't going to protect us when this white boy decides he's going to make a move on us, because that's coming within the next 10 to 15 years. It's going to be some serious, serious gunplay between the races. That's just coming. That's just a fact. Because the test cases are what's going on with what you just saw in the churches and all of these mass shootings. Those are test cases. But people don't realize that. And you always got these Negro preachers, preachers and the rest of them always talking about turn your guns in and all that foolishness. Any Negro that ever turned a gun in that is legal, you understand, or you don't have some sort of weaponry in your house to protect you and your family, you sick. And I'll leave you with that, brother, and have a beautiful day.
Peace to you, my brother. Thank you. No, you are on point. You are definitely on point, and because that's why I have this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, to talk about us making that transition, to making that move to sovereignty. We cannot be sovereign here in a land of our enemy. And truly, the European, the Caucasian, specifically here, has treated us nothing but like an enemy. There has never been and never will be any respect for our humanity. And so I agree that the skills that we have and we must acquire more, they need to be utilized with our brothers and sisters on the continent to assist them into building Africa. I don't know what country. You could start in Ghana. You could start anywhere. But the whole bottom line is that the continent itself, this is the dream of Kwame Nkrumah. This is what Patrice Lumumba was talking about. This is what Sheikh Anta Diop was talking about. This is what Idi Amin Dada was talking about. A unified Africa, not just a country here or there, but a unified Africa, eliminating the superficial boundaries, eliminating all of the petty differences, all of the stuff that we come together. Africa has what everybody wants, think they can't do without, and don't want to pay for. And I know I'm just quoting Dr. John Henry Clark, because you know I love that quote, but that's real. And that is a fact. And when you look at taking the resources out of Africa, when you look at how they do it, how the European has done it, I just saw a piece on Facebook when these young brothers were children mining coltan. And Colton is using lithium batteries that run the computer that I'm using here to talk to you on, or your flat screen TV, or your cell phones. These are necessities in this technologically modern world, but it comes from Africa. And it comes from child labor, and it comes very cheaply because that's how they do it. But yet, when you bought that computer, when you bought that cell phone, when you bought that flat screen TV, it wasn't cheap, was it? But the main ingredient to make it happen, and it won't happen unless that's there, comes out of Africa. That's why I'm saying to us, brothers and sisters, we keep fighting for a piece of this nasty ass, rotten ass pie. I know what we have done here. I know our history here. I know our history. No, I'm not a scholar. But damn it, I read. And one of the things that I love to read is about us. And our struggle. And our achievement. Our trials and tribulations. And so I'm saying to us, and one of the problems that affects us, religion, particularly Christianity. Christianity prevents us from coming together because Christianity speaks to you as an individual. I'm saved. I'm blessed and highly favored. My community is going to hell. My family ain't worth a damn thing. But I'm blessed. I'm highly favored because I got Jesus. I'm saved. Jeremiah Kamara, who lives here in Atlanta, produced a documentary called Contradiction. You can go online. Maybe you can go to YouTube. Might be something there. Jeremiah Kamara, Contradiction. Get the documentary. Let's free ourselves. Let's free our minds. The only thing preventing us from doing this, just like he mentioned Aki, I know Aki. We had Aki for our first event for the 100 Black Men since in Milwaukee. You know, Aki's in Chicago. You know, in fact, one of the books I used to suggest that they read, along with Anthony Browder's from the Browder File, Aki Mahabudi's book, Black Men, Obsolete, Single, and Dangerous, Kwanzaa Kanjufu, Lessons in History, Celebration of Blackness, all these books to start your consciousness raising. Easy books to read right there, help giving you a lot of good information, you know. But, you know, when brother said that, Haki said the Caucasian is our enemy. Then he said, no, he ain't. Well, you know, he had a couple of business, had a school and so forth. And maybe he's looking for funding. I don't know. But the bottom line is, no, when he said it, then it is true today. They are our enemy because they've acted in that way. And yet we continue to beg them to stop it. We continue to beg them to do better. We keep trying and trying. Damn them. Let us do better. Let us break the chains. Let us release the vice grip on our minds. Let us step outside of the imposed boundaries that they have put upon us. Let us do that. The greatest thing that could be written in the annals of history is that a people, that there's a small group of people out of Europe, small group, less than 10% of this world's population, and they subjugated the world. And they went into Africa and they took African people because they had superior weaponry, not because they were physically better, not because they were more intelligent, they were evil-minded. And they took African people out of Africa and they went throughout other hemispheres in the southern hemisphere, the western hemisphere, and they brought African people into Europe and so forth, and they made African people work. And they forbid African people to do anything other than what they wanted them to do. And they dogged African people out. And then they later came and took African people's land. And they made African people work on that land, on their own continent, in their own countries. Every country but Ethiopia was colonized by Europeans. And even to this day, Europeans still have a strong hold on the continent in various forms. And now here comes the Chinese and others, the Indians. But yet we don't run nothing nowhere in Europe. We don't run nothing nowhere in India. We don't run nothing nowhere in China or any other place. In fact, we don't run nothing in Africa. And yet we want to run something here. We ain't running nothing here. All this excitement about the election because a few, quote, Democrats got elected. The reality is this. Either we unite, unify, or we die. Period. Either we unify or we die. And what that means is that you consciously realize the importance of coming together, and you work towards that. You work towards African people realizing their dreams. You work towards African people coming together to educate themselves and inform themselves. You work towards that. Your mindset is that. You do that on a daily basis. This ain't a part-time thing. This is the liberation for African people is a full-time mindset change. But see, because of the religion, because of the systems, we believe that it is just as much ours as it is theirs, and we have just as much right as they do. Brothers and sisters, it is a matter of time. It is only a matter of time. Some can argue that when the time is up, it will be late or too late. It'll be too late. In our tenuous position, could ultimately mean our death. But I'm optimistic. It does look bad. It does. And I agree. But also I believe that we can do this. Because I have grandchildren, and I would love for my grandchildren to live in a world where we can live and love freely in, whether you stay here in America or wherever you may go, or if you go home to Africa. The reason why we are disrespected, marginalized, treated so horribly globally today has been in some time is because Africa has been under siege and we have not taken it back. We, meaning Africans throughout the diaspora and Africans on the continent. And when we do, you will see a fundamental difference in the behavior of other people towards us. You will see a situation where we're not trying to run out of Africa, but we're going home to it because we realize now that work must be done to build it. Africa needs infrastructure. Africa needs roads, highways, railroads, ports. They need ship making, planes, hospitals, schools, towns, cities. And we have the resource to do it. The human resources as well as the mineral resource. When I saw the picture of that heifer queen, whatever, of Britain, sitting in a vault, all that gold around her, there's not one damn gold mine in England.
It is all comes from Africa. When I see other commercials for diamonds, in Israel, the main import is diamonds. The main export is diamonds. European Jews control diamonds. European Jews suppress the amount of diamonds on the market so they can be an artificial elevation of cost for diamonds. So they can charge you $4,500 to $6,000. They control diamonds. There was a documentary on PBS. Might want to go on YouTube to check that out. How the Hasidic Jews and the European Jews control diamonds. All of it comes from Africa. It is ours. But yet we beg this cracker to please respect me, respect my humanity, treat me with dignity, educate me, let me live near you. It's a damn shame. Even here in Atlanta, with all the people, I've said this before, this is in Atlanta, is the widest disparity of us who have. Because a number of people with wherewithal, with money, have moved here because they can buy land and build a home a lot more inexpensive than they could on the West Coast or on the East Coast. So you can buy some land and put a home on it. May cost you $4, $5, $6 million, but it will cost you $10, $15 million on the West Coast, $10, $15 million on the East Coast. So they come here. But yet there's no collectivism. There's no pulling of resources. We don't have one damn supermarket in the metropolitan area of Atlanta that we own. And it's hard to find that something that we do own. With the exception, of course, the usual barbershops, beauty salons. In fact, I was going to say funeral homes, but some funeral homes are owned by Caucasians with an American African person in the front. So to give you that impression. I can't find a cleaners near my home here. I can't find a service station anywhere in the vicinity of where I live here in the city of Atlanta. So what I'm saying and what I will continue to say every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, because it is something that I clearly understand. And yes, the responsibility for us to get out of this mess, it is ours, ours alone. But we're in this mess because we have been whitewashed. We have been brainwashed. Our minds are not our own. So our behaviors, and some of us, is like I said earlier, if we knew better, we do better. But a lot of us don't want to know. If we knew better, we do better. Yeah. But a lot of us don't want to know, because by knowing, you have to change your attitude and your behavior. This was a tough day for me today, brothers and sisters. I had to present that information about Umar. And I know there's some of the people already said that, knew that, or felt that, you know. But, you know, whatever happens, if he doesn't, that is what it is. And to me, I can't support that. Never. I can't support that. I don't care how eloquently you state the case. Because we need, brothers and sisters, in this struggle for the liberation of our people, to develop the sovereignty that we need so we can have a future
that would be dictated by us, that will be shaped and fashioned by us. So you mean to tell me, brothers and sisters, that the Caucasian made this decision that he made? Oh, but that's okay for them to do that. And then what is even deeper is he imposed it. That's like the Dr. Wade Noble's definition of power, which I think is very definitive. He says, power is the ability to define reality, then have someone else accept your definition as if it's their own. Power is not money. The money you see is these international bankers, and it's backed up by nothing but the word of the United States government, which, of course, is the ability to kill you. So it's backed up by no resources, so really there's no power in that. Power is not education or information. Because if the education and information you receive is flawed and inaccurate, and it truly is, you can't derive power from that. Power is not politics, voting. It's not. We have more people in elected positions today than ever, and our condition is just as bad or worse. Power is the ability to define reality. We need to understand that when the Caucasian put himself on the pedestal and kicked everybody else off, we need to say to ourselves, who are we in Caucasian's reality? Then answer that. And then you'll say, damn that. We need to shape and fashion reality in our image and in our interest. And we can't do that in America. We have to go home. We have to go home. And the brothers and sisters on the continent must understand that we're coming home. Not like what happened in Liberia in the 1800s. No, damn that. We're coming home to work together. Respect one another. Trust one another. Work with one another to build a model of a society where nobody is exploited. A society, as Dr. Clark said, where they didn't have a word for old folks home because nobody threw away grandma or grandpa. They didn't have a word for jail because nobody even went to one. They didn't have a word for orphanage because they didn't let the little kids. No, we're talking about a society that is holistic, a society that is educating and compulsive with the best of what human life should be about. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end every program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. Brothers and sisters, this program is dedicated to helping to free the African mind. Stay with us, be with us, and have a great weekend. I hope that everything will be well. And see you next week. Have a good weekend. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. Bless you, family.